the smartest show in the Bay Area?
You guys are an intellectual feast for the smart sports fan in the Bay Area.
Wow.
You're pretty much the smartest guys on the radio.
I agree.
Good Lord, how big is your ego?
Are they the funniest show in the Bay Area?
Give it a laugh. Come on. You're a funny guy. Come on. Give me a laugh.
You are funny, dude.
Hit that S again.
Are they the coolest show in the Bay Area?
And no white boys. They cool.
That's what people are saying.
You guys are phenomenal.
This is one of the most perfect ways that I could end my day, getting a chance to talk to Mr. Mark and Dan, you know?
We'll let you be the judge.
Oh.
All I know is it's a couple of Bay Area boys talking sports.
I know nothing.
Thanks.
It's Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, let's go. Here we go. It is, it's the best day of the week. I cannot wait. Yeah, let's get into it. Because Ramona Shelburne is coming on the show. And Mason Crosby is coming on the show.
I'm excited.
We can get into Kickergate. Tabor Pepper, Debo Samuel. Take a side.
Right.
Mason Crosby, former Packers kicker. He does a radio show out there in Wisconsin now. And so he's going to hop on the show. We got a lot of Niners. We got a lot of Warriors. 888-957-9570. I think this is the biggest game of Brock Purdy's career. I don't even know if he's going to play in it.
That's a stretch, but...
It's not, because here's what I mean.
The Super Bowl wasn't big?
No, I mean on a personal level. And again, like, if I offered you a Super Bowl ring or $60 million a year, what would you take?
Probably the millions.
There you go.
If I had never made more than $1 million in a year.
What I mean by this is not in terms of the biggest game of his career, in terms of career resume and accomplishments. It I think very well could be the biggest game in his career in terms of public perception. And this is not fair, but that's the way life works. This is the way life works in professional sports. We're going to spend a lot of time on this show today, the next 4 hours, I would bet, talking about two individuals, Brock Purdy and Jonathan Kuminga. There'll be others, but we're going to focus in a lot on those two guys. Is that fair? Does that make sense? It's just kind of the way we as fans operate. And Brock Purdy, again, I don't even know if he's playing in this game. But if he plays in this game, you got to think about what's being asked of Brock and why this game represents all the things. You are injured. You are up against the wall. You are desperate. You're on the road. It's cold. It's going to be damp. And you're going against a winning team, a conference foe, and a traditional rival. Those are the places where you grab people. And you get them on your side. And by the way, even if you do play, you're hurt. Those are the places where you get people on your side. And we are moving very, very quickly toward the end of this season. This game literally holds within it the Niners either being likely to make the playoffs or unlikely to make the playoffs. That is true based on this game alone. And so for that reason, I think the way Brock Purdy plays, if he plays, is going to shape the narrative around him as we head toward the end of the season and contract talks.
Yeah, the narrative is one thing and the reality is a completely separate one. And I don't think that this game shapes anything for the organization about what they think about Brock Purdy. It seems like the owner already has come out and said that, yeah, he's getting as much money as we need to pay him to keep him. And the coach actually came on this week, not on our show, but in his teleconference and said he thinks Brock's playing as well as last year. So the narrative is very much a fan thing and a sports talk radio thing. If he plays okay and they lose at Green Bay, I don't think the team is thinking at all about, well, that's it. You know, we're 5-6, and I don't think we can move forward with Brock Purdy anymore. I'd be stunned if they changed their tune over the course of one game, especially when you look at the problems with this team, and Kyle Shanahan's talked about it. It's not Brock. It's injuries. Wow. It's a lot of other things that have gone against him. It's been penalties. It's been not closing out games. It's been injuries and the rest of it. I don't think that any of this, in their eyes, falls on Brock Purdy.
The words that Shanahan said yesterday that you twice referenced right there.
Yeah.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, came on our show yesterday and said this about what Shanahan said.
First of all, I'd be truly, truly surprised if Kyle truly meant that. He's giving a press conference.
Right.
So He knows. He knows. Believe me, he knows. I'll give you an example. On their first third quarter possession, okay, he threw to McCaffrey for 6 yards on 3rd and 15. It was just outside the red zone, so they ended up kicking a field goal. So that was a great example of Purdy just not seeing the game with the same innate, refined, nuanced feel of timing and anticipation that we've come to expect. He had two throws there. He had a seam route to Samuel, and he had Jennings on the high-low with McCaffrey that he would have made last season without even thinking. So instead, he threw a check down to McCaffrey for 6 yards, and he threw it too quick. It was a clean pocket. He just got rid of it quick. And then they kick a field goal instead of perhaps getting a touchdown. There was another case, and see, some of these occur when there's completions. So you don't think of them as, oh, maybe he didn't see it the right way, because some of them are completions. But there were too many dropbacks in this game in which, to me, and I've been watching the Niners, you know, for years and years and years, as you guys know, in which I do not believe, and again, you know, I'm not talking to Kyle, obviously, but where I believe he just did not process the route concept versus the coverage in the way that he needed to and with the necessary clarity.
Okay, Greg Cosell, NFL Films, you can take it or leave it, but his take is what Kyle said yesterday in front of a microphone is a bunch of bunk.
Right, I agree with Greg in that assessment, having watched those plays a bunch of times from the All-22, but I also don't think that Kyle sees that and says, oh man, all of a sudden he can't see it now, he's blind. I think that it, you know, it could be a number of other factors, like you talked about, the shoulder, which may or may not be a real injury. It might just be sore and hurt, and we don't know, but today's news about him leaving the throwing portion of practice early, that's not a good sign.
Nope.
That doesn't trend toward, I'm feeling better. That trends toward, ow, this really hurts. And I don't think that you can look at this team with the offensive line being okay. And I was looking at the PFF numbers yesterday. They're number 15 in pass blocking.
Okay.
They're number 1 in run blocking.
Interesting.
The offensive line.
Really?
Yeah, according to PFF numbers.
That's wild.
And, you know, they've actually done great on the year as a run blocking unit. But the big issue for me has been the interior three in pass protection, and the pocket caves in and Brock runs away. And so all these things, I think, are interrelated. Brock's shoulder, the O-line, the wide receivers not getting open, the injuries. So I think when you look at it from the global view, 30,000 feet, I think you still see a quarterback who's really good.
Okay.
And you don't change your tune. I don't think you change course at all in what you're going to do.
Of course he's good.
I know, but I don't think that it changes your approach about the offseason.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, because we don't know what's about to happen next.
True.
Like, I don't. I'm not making the case that it's all about Green Bay. I'm simply saying that it's all about the story that's unfolding, and Green Bay's the next one, and it's the linchpin. It's the launch point.
It's a big one.
You're either moving toward the playoffs, or you're next to dead. Like, you're on life support if you lose this game. Your playoff chances,
totally, depending on what happens around you.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah.
But
Arizona loses. And,
if Arizona loses, then Seattle wins.
Right, so, but you'd rather have Arizona lose. That way you can control your own destiny against Arizona.
Sure, but I mean, you're heading for Buffalo on Sunday Night Football in basically a must-win situation with the Bills coming off of a bye at home in late November. Like, good luck. Good luck. You know what I mean? So I just, to me, that's what I'm getting at. This game has a chance to save the season. And if you go out there and you don't play well, like, and I mean really don't play well, you better believe there's going to be a new conversation that starts to unfold about Brock Purdy. And I don't think, you know, like Guru asked earlier, will the Niners be cutthroat here? Oh, my God, yes. Oh, my God, yes. And so if this goes awry the next few games, I'm not saying there's a new conversation about whether or not Brock's good. I think we've reached a point contractually with quarterbacks in the NFL where you got to start asking tougher questions than, is he good? Dak is good. Dak is good. Trevor Lawrence at times has looked good. And now people are making fun of those teams for the contracts that they went out and offered. You have to be more than good if we're going to do $50 or $60 million. You've got to be in cement. You're our guy. We believe in you for a long time, like 6 more years, and you're not just good with our current scenario. we're projecting forward what this organization is going to look like for 6 years, and you have to be the one to navigate us through all of that.
Sure.
Those are big questions.
Yes, but I don't think that they have those questions. I really believe that they are in cement. I think that they know that he's a guy who sees it, and he can make all the throws, and he's smart, and he can make plays with his legs. For me, they've never given any indication that that is not something that they are in cement about. And then it comes down to what Matt Barrows said to the guys, Steiny and Goo, and what he wrote in his mailbag about the market is the market. And if you do think that he's that guy, and I think that they believe that, then the market will bear what you pay him, and that's just the way that goes.
Well, I mean, he's not wrong about that. Kyle Shanahan on TK's pod in the offseason said as much, not so much about Brock, but all players. Where he sort of looks, he looks at the going rate, and it no different than walking into a Target. This is what it costs. Do you want to go get an area rug? Go to that aisle. They're all about $99. That's what it costs. Do you want to do it more expensive? Great, go to Pottery Barn. Do you want to do it for less? I don't even better go to something.com and see if you can find it for less. That's the price. You want this or not? And that is the way he looks at it. At the same time, like there to me, there's a larger question of not so much just the price, but you really do have to make a decision. And this is what Breer was talking about earlier that I referenced. You have to make a decision with regard to not is Brock Purdy who we want to play with right now, but is Brock Purdy good enough to navigate like what you're seeing this year, basically happening all the time. Are you the glue that when all of this starts falling apart, and some of it will be on purpose, when we start releasing players with big contracts, are you the guy to still keep us good? Because the Niners, I know that that's what they have designs on. They have designs on being good every single year.
Right, but no team has a guy able to keep their team good when everything falls apart around it. And, you know, you can talk about Patrick Mahomes, and yes, he has had a running back who was gone, and they traded the top wide receiver, and they still won the Super Bowl, and Rashee Rice is out for the year and all the rest of it, but they still have a very good offensive line, and they have enough guys around them. They have a Hall of Fame tight end, so it's not like Kansas City has the cupboard completely stripped bare. Any team that does that, you're not going to have a quarterback who's able to win and do well.
No, but
that doesn't exist.
But they rebooted. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is still doing well. Not only did they get rid of Tyreek Hill, you're watching this year, they lost their whole receiving core. And they've rebooted in different ways. Trade for DeAndre Hopkins. Bring back Juju Smith-Schuster. Do whatever. But they also philosophically kind of went a different way. And they started building it around defense a little bit. Maybe the Niners will do that. I don't know what the philosophy will be when there is, say, no Debo, no Christian, no George, no Trent. I don't know what the philosophy will be, but they have to feel like they can build a philosophy around Brock and win. And if they don't, then I think this is actually a question. So it would be interesting to hear what some of you think about this. Can Brock Purdy navigate? Forget what he's worth and if you think he's good. We know he's good. But can he navigate the transition of the roster, which is coming at some point? 888-957-9570. We'll take your calls on this. We're sponsored by the San Francisco International Airport. It's Willard and Dibbs.
Pause. Pause, pause, pause.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
By the way, I forgot to mention that Brock's about to talk.
Brock talk?
Brock's about to talk.
I hope somebody asks him about the Greg Cosell critique of his play.
I'm sure they will.
Or at least ask him, like, hey, Brock, on that drive in the third quarter, it seemed like you had a couple of guys open. Are you not seeing it? Are you blind? You're blind, baby. Blind to the fact.
That's a great question. No one's gonna ask that.
Hey, Brock, when you have receivers open, why don't you throw it to them?
That's a great question.
Do you have yourself in a fantasy league?
Is there a reason that you're not throwing the football when you play games? Is there a reason?
Are there open receivers that you just don't like more than others?
That's a good question.
Like, are you just a Juwanophile.
Ooh.
You just love Juwan so much.
What kind of question is that?
You and your can activity.
Well, it's kind of become my thing.
Audible can in trash during the Greg Cosell.
Well, there was that too. Yeah. At some point, we should play that again just to mark the spot where you hear me hawk my... my bubble water can across the room. Count it. It was good.
Clanging.
But it also made a loud noise in the middle of an interview. Did. But anyway, whatever.
And there's that. Yeah. It's all right.
Mm-hmm.
LaCroix right. today. Nice.
Yeah. Brock's going to talk in a little bit. And I don't know. There's some sudden nervousness. It's one thing to not throw on a Wednesday, but when then you start throwing on a Thursday and then you leave in the middle of practice, I would say we're one bad day away from Brandon Allen starting the game of the year.
And Brock may not talk if...
Then you get that's a real tell.
Exactly.
If Brock doesn't talk, you can go ahead and start your Brandon Allen stuff now.
Exactly, because the starting quarterback is required to talk on Thursday, and so if he doesn't talk, that tells you that he's not the starting quarterback for this weekend. But even though he may or may not be the starter yet... If I'm the Niners and there's any question at all about his shoulder and him leaving practice early, I would not have him talk. And, you know, maybe you take the fine or I don't even know how that works. If he leaves practice,
right.
And I'm not saying that he totally left practice, but he left the field. And so if that happens, does he still have to talk?
I don't think you have to be correct on a Thursday in sort of predicting who your starting quarterback's going to be on a Sunday. So, in other words, Brock can go talk, and then they could turn around tomorrow and be like, oof, gosh, he woke up, and it flared up on him, and we're going to go ahead and name Brandon Allen the starter. I wouldn't have Brandon Allen come out and suddenly handle the press conference today.
Right.
Would you?
No, but at the same time, I don't know if I want Brock out there coming off a game where, you know, he threw a pick and they lost to Seattle, and now he's had a couple of practices, one where he didn't throw and one where he threw and then didn't have to or didn't play any additional in that practice. I don't know if I want him out there answering questions about, hey, how's your shoulder and why'd you leave and what happened and how come in two straight games you haven't been able to throw the ball down the field and all these other things. Like today's session, if he talks, it's going to be more of a grilling than he's faced yet this year.
I don't know. I think that's actually pretty easy.
It should be.
No, it's an easy question to answer. Like, what's your level of concern on the shoulder? Well, a little bit, you know, like it just flared up a little bit out there. There is some soreness, but, you know, we're going to manage it, and we're going to make every effort to get back out there tomorrow and be ready on Sunday.
Is the shoulder the reason why you haven't thrown the ball more than 20 yards down the field in the last two games?
No. I've been totally capable these last couple of games, and we felt good about some of the things that we were doing on offense. We need to execute better, but my job is to hit the open man, and I was completely capable the last 2 weeks of doing that.
But I'm looking at the tape, and my friend Greg Cosell was pointing out that there were receivers who seemed to be open down the field, and yet you didn't cut it loose. Why is that?
I mean, I can't really speak to what somebody else saw on film. I know what I saw on film, and I know it's very easy. And there's a lot of interest from a lot of people out there who are going to, you know, head on social media and get all the video and tell everybody they knew exactly what was going on. But to be out there on the field, there's a lot of stuff going on that you can't see on film. And I make the best decision that I can on every play, but there's no doubt I need to be better.
It seems like you're looking to run a little bit more than in the past. Is that because the pocket's breaking down, or do you feel like you're more spry this year?
That's because I wanted to be flash for Halloween, and I love right. running. So I leave whether it's time to or not. I don't know. What do you want him to say?
You're 14th in quarterback rating. It seems like you've taken a step back this year. Did you hurt your Achilles when you took that step back?
I don't... Okay, now you're trolling.
Totally.
Now you're trolling.
But are you telling me that there will be no trolls at this press conference?
Oh, there'll be trolls. Well, at least one.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's easy stuff to answer.
Sure.
That's easy stuff to answer. Brock's a pro, and...
I get it. Yeah. And he'll always be humble, and he'll take a lot of the blame, but I just wonder about the shoulder mixed with... the loss mixed with, you know, what we've seen on tape about guys being open, and also you know, this offense not looking the same. And I know all the numbers you ran yesterday, and numbers are numbers, especially when they're your numbers, but they were all per drive. And I look at fourth quarter points, not great. Oh. Red zone offense, not great. His overall numbers across the board, not as good as last year.
Well, you know what I actually love about the 49ers situation is that every group can sit there and go, my fault, my fault. Now, we could get a line of calls right now if we wanted to go offense or defense, who's at fault? You'd get a lot of people on both sides of the ledger, actually. And I know it's a great offense week because they only scored 17 points and they did not make good on a bunch of opportunities. But I also love what Fred Warner said. The three games that everybody's mad about that the Niners lost, he's like, we led all of those games in the fourth quarter.
Right.
The offense gave us the lead and we didn't hold it. That's our job. You can say whatever you want about it should have been a 10-point lead. It should have been a 20-point lead. Should have this, should have that. Fred's take is, I'm the leader of the defense. You gave us a lead. Our job is to keep it. And they didn't. The offense's job is to make the lead bigger. And they didn't. The special teams, don't even get me started. And if you put all three of them together, they've only got one head coach. So here's looking at you, fill in blank. Here's looking at you. Nobody's immune from this. Nobody's doing great. I don't care that the DVOA is up in the high right,
which means
the offense is good and the defense is good. Well, not good enough.
Well, the defense is not up in the high right on EPA. They are over across the line as far as being good in the dropback EPA allowed, but the rush defense, they're slightly below the average,
yeah, but
and
the
that's
overall,
been a bigger problem.
But the collective is above. We did this yesterday. They're one of eight teams in the high right quadrant.
Offense and defense. I'm talking about just the defense.
Yeah, understood.
The defense itself is slightly below. There are nine defenses that are up in that money spot in the proper quadrant, and the biggest issue, I think, has been the rush defense, and it's mainly been in the fourth quarter. And you go back to the Ram game, Kyren Williams, the Arizona game, James Conner. These are times where you need to stop somebody, and you have a hard time doing it because your interior defensive line hasn't been great.
888-957-9570. What's your confidence level that Brock Purdy, not is he good, is he the guy that can take the 49ers through transition? And I think it's interesting that you sort of think that that decision has already been made. I've spoken like that in the past as well. I think the decision has clearly been made that Brock Purdy is A and the franchise quarterback. I also know that people change their mind. And I also think this. I thought there was an interesting question that came up with Steiny and Goo today when the idea of plan Bs came up.
Yeah.
And whether or not you think Kyle Shanahan has a plan B at quarterback. And I don't just mean this year. I mean for the future. In other words, you come into this year and you're like, Brock was an MVP candidate. Brock's fantastic. Jed York goes public. We're going to pay him $1 billion. And that's our guy. But do you think at somewhere they went, okay, now, what if it doesn't go well this year? Because,
of course, what if he gets hurt?
And we haven't paid him yet.
What if he has a 12-month injury?
You think he's got a plan B?
Of course.
Yeah.
And a plan C, and a plan D, and a plan E.
I agree with you.
I don't think that Kyle Shanahan is the type to not overplan and plan for everything. Look at his laminated play sheet. If you look at that thing, and you can't really read what's on there because it's written so small, but it looks to me like 125 plays on each side of it. And it's folded over, and he gets his pen out, and he marks it. So I would imagine that on that play sheet, he's got more than 250 plays. Normally in a football game, you get about 60 offensive plays. So I think that he's overprepared for what he's going to face in different situations and down in distance and all the rest of it from an offensive standpoint. So if you extrapolate that to a bigger question, does he have a plan B about the quarterback? Of course he does. And this year, the plan B is to go to Allen or Dobbs. And in the future, maybe the plan B going into this next year is to draft another quarterback.
See, I don't even look at Allen and Dobbs as part of the plan.
They're plan B right now.
Those are in emergency break glass guys.
Right.
And like you hope that it's a situation like this where it's like if Brock needs to miss a game, it's a game. maybe two games. And you hope that if you have to do that, you're in a situation where you thought you'd be 8-2 or 7-3. And if you lose the game, okay, we can still figure this out. Like, this would be just another brick on the wall. If Brock Purdy misses this game this weekend, to me, it is another brick on the wall of what has felt like a perfect storm all year long. We always use that phrase about, you know, if anything can go wrong, it goes wrong. And that is exactly what this year sort of feels like. Everything that could go wrong has kind of gone wrong, and this would be another brick on that wall that you come to a situation where you kind of have to go on the road to Lambeau Field and win a football game that's really hard to prove to yourself and prove to everybody and keep the math all in your favor. You have to go perform. Oh, by the way, you get to do it with your backup quarterback. I mean,
well, for me, that's a, more of an excuse than a reason, because you, even though you've been through some things, you had three games that were still winnable. And so for me, it's hard to look at injuries when you have two 10-point leads with injured guys and you blow it.
Oh, I'm not
and
just then, talking about injuries.
No, I'm just
I'm
saying
talking about everything.
Well, things don't go right because you don't make a play. And that maybe signals that you're not as good of a team as we all think. Because ultimately, you are what your record says you are when it comes to do you make the playoffs or not.
No one's excusing anything.
Right.
A lot of this was self-made. I mean, it starts with the summer.
So I don't think it's a perfect storm per se. I think it's just you get down to crunch time in a game, and you don't make plays.
You can call it whatever you want, but I'm talking about the whole deal from the beginning has felt bad. The whole deal. The summer felt bad. Camp felt bad. The season has felt bad.
The opener was pretty cool.
The opener was fun. Yeah, I'm not saying there haven't been little moments of excitement. You know, I know people that grabbed their phone and started running around in circles making videos when Brandon Ayuk signed. Woo!
Yeah.
Great. How's that going? But so there are moments that feel good. They've been fleeting, and they've been proven to be not as good as you actually thought they were when they were happening.
Because of the results on the field.
Because of everything.
Right. If they're 8-2 right now, we wouldn't be looking at the summer as a broken summer.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be looking at the negative. So
no,
we look at where they are, and now we look back at things that may have led us to where we are at 5-5.
Sure. I'm just saying, like, if they were 8-2, but they're not. They're not. They're 5-5, and when you go, like, July, that was not fun. August, that was not fun. And then we get into September and October, and we're like, yeah, pretty much not fun and not good enough. And there, you know, now you've had players pushing each other in the head. You had multiple holdouts. You've had massive injuries. You've had so many things that just don't feel good, including sitting down to watch the games when they've got a 3 or a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, but that's results.
Yes.
If you look at the process, like if they were 8-2, we wouldn't be looking at the process as broken as we are at 5-5. We wouldn't be dwelling on holdouts, and we wouldn't be hyper focused on injuries, and we wouldn't even care about the Debo Tabor Pepper
of course
set
not.
To because they won that game.
But that's self-review.
They won the game,
but that's
and
you,
still.
But that's how you do it.
That's why I look at the results, and now we're going to look at the process. Where,
of course, if you're a business and you don't have a good year, you look at your process if you know what you're doing.
Right, and this is where I talk about Kyle Shanahan and that process and think about what would need to change with that process, because the hires that he's made, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator, maybe those aren't the fits. And the amount of plates that he is spinning, maybe he has too many plates in the air. And that's where I look at the process, and I go to the top, Kyle Shanahan, and wonder what his process will be.
Well, and maybe it's also the cost of doing business. Grandy brought this up yesterday. I think it's an interesting point, which is there's the potential, if this season doesn't go well, that we walk out of it for the second year in a row with the organization not feeling good about who they hired at defensive coordinator. And I don't want to get into the whole, like, Wilkes is a scapegoat thing, whatever. Doesn't matter. The point is at the end of the year, the organization deemed that as not a fit. And who knows? It could happen again this year. I have no idea where this is going with Nick Sorensen. But the vanilla ice cream has melted, and I don't know where this is all going to head. But a 49ers staff from coaches to even front office executives, has been poached every single year. And that's a good thing. That's a sign of a really good organization. But it also means that you've got to go find a replacement every single year. And you can't always find the right person. I'm not saying that's not on Kyle and everybody who's making the hire, but it's a challenge that other teams don't necessarily face, right? I mean, how long has Spagnuolo been with Kansas City?
I mean, probably 8 years.
I mean, they're like, right? They're just, they found the people and they have largely been able to sit there and keep the people. The Niners have had to replace people. A couple times they did it really well. Now it looks like a couple times they didn't do it really well.
Yeah. Well, your job is to build a staff that's going to work for you. And I look at what they've done defensively this year, and they're number 31 in blitz percentage. And I was listening to somebody yesterday or the day before talking about this team and the personnel. This personnel is not suited to blitz. So they don't blitz a lot because they don't have a lot of good blitzing players. And Fred Warner occasionally will blitz, but he's so much better in coverage that you don't want to blitz him. Devondre Campbell, he runs probably a 4.8. You're not going to blitz him. And they don't ever do the cat blitz where you bring the corner up and you blitz the corner. So when we talk about the Niners not blitzing, a lot of it is personnel because they don't have those types of players who are good at blitzing. So you rely on your four, and of your four, you've got 1.5 really good pass rushers, Bosa and half of Floyd. So you basically are rushing 1.5 guys on most plays. Sam O's been good. Sam O's gotten home a few times, and you know Givens has gotten a sack or two. But in general, your four-man pressure has to be really good when you're not going to blitz, and this four-man pressure is not really good.
Well, and I likely feel the same way about Nick Sorensen this weekend as they do about Brock Purdy. This is a defining football game because it is my prediction that Nick Bosa will not be playing. And you said they've got a pass rusher and a half. That means they're down to a half a pass rusher. And if you think you can go vanilla and just rush four without Nick Bosa, then I'm off your wagon. I will denounce Nick Sorensen as the defensive coordinator of the 49ers if he goes vanilla again all game long without Nick Bosa, with Jordan Love being the quarterback on the other side. You're going to have to dial something up. You have to. You're going to have to. So the defense has got to look different, and who knows what we're going to get. Maybe it'll be effective. Love is prone to throw the pick, and they're going to need it.
Yeah,
they're going to need it this week.
Green Bay, number one, according to PFF, in pass blocking. Their pass blocking rating is 82.5, which is the best in football. Their run blocking is 26 or 27.
Yeah.
And even with that, Josh Jacobs is having a nice year. So if I'm Green Bay and there is no Nick Bosa, and it's unconfirmed, but I'm kind of the same mind as you that I don't know if he can go. But then again, you think about Nick Bosa. The dude does not miss games. He had a bad oblique last week, and he played. The only time he misses games is when he has no ACL. But other than that, he tends to play through some stuff.
And
I'm interested to see what today looked like for Nick.
I've been surprised at how the week has sounded so far, and I mean that like it sounded better than I thought it would. But I still would predict right now that he's going to be unlikely to play. We'll see. Rafi and Berkeley on Willard and Dibs. Hi, Rafi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
You know, I just kind of wanted to chime in because I think, you know, I know we need something to talk about and we got to talk about it all. But to me, you know, watching football is always a game of inches. It's an inch here. It's an inch there. Literally how we kind of calculate the movement on the field is a unit of measurement. We talk about it in yards. And this year, the 49ers just have lost the inches game. I think, you know, it's really telling that their stats are good and they should be good. They're a good team. And a lot of time it just comes down to things that I think are actually outside of your control with the sport. And it's that those inches and the kind of incremental, tiny things that go back and forth that really do change a game. I think we could be looking at an 8-2 team. The truth is I think, you know, we could be looking at a 3-7 team. You know, it's like,
well, but
it's all inches all the time.
But Rafi, was it last year? Is that how last year felt to you? Because they, like, all of their wins were by double digits. Almost all.
Yeah, no, totally. I totally hear that. I think, you know, how do you really quantify the difference between going from an elite team to like merely a good team? I don't think anyone has an answer for that, right? It's all these things, and some of them are margins, and some of them aren't margins, but they're not an elite team. They are a good team. The elite teams just are juggernauts this year, and I think we do kind of have to face the fact that they are good, and they could be better, but they're not a juggernaut this year.
Yeah, you know? Rafi, I agree with that. Thank you, Rafi. I agree with that, but I think that's what everyone's trying to figure out. Is when you go, well, they were an elite team and now they're just a good team. Well, why?
Well, it's pretty simple to me. I just looked at two metrics as Rafi was talking. Third downs. Last year, they were number four in conversions. This year, they're number four. Last year, red zone, they were number one. This year, they're number 26.
Yep.
So I don't want to boil it all down to just that one thing, but when you look at those key things, and we always talk about third down, how are you on third down? This year, they're number four. They're right. Really good on third down.
But you can extend your point. When you go, it's the red zone, then someone could go, but why is it the red zone? Who is causing that? Why?
It's the same thing as everything. It's the offensive line. The quarterback doesn't see it. You've got injuries. Shanahan's gotten stale. I think all the things that we look at macro, you can look at the red zone micro and see it the same way.
888-957-9570. How do you see it? How do you see it? If the 49ers were elite and now they're just good, what dropped them down a peg? We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. We're expecting Ramona Shelburne in the next hour or so. Mason Crosby, former Packers kicker, in the 5 o'clock hour. Keep taking your phone calls along the way. It's Willard and Dibbs.